it's so important. It's more important now than ever to be a pillar in your community for sound information, but to also engage your readers, entertain them, and offer them a smile that they didn't have coming that day, or to offer them something that could help them live a little better during this time that's so difficult for so many.
Those are the words of CNN digital producer, journalist, and Quill & Scroll Advisory Board member, Erica Hernandez. Erica is with us today on The Source, Quill & Scroll's podcast, to discuss cross-journalistic reporting, adapting to digital platforms, and covering the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm your host, Sylvia Club. Welcome to The Source. Thanks for joining us today, Erica.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start by discussing your career in journalism. I have your resume with me, and let me just say, you've worked in so many different facets of the journalism industry. How did you go from being a student at Coral Gables High School, then a student at the University of Florida, then a sports intern, to a radio intern, to a news and web producer, to a mobile producer for CNN?
Yeah, no, that's a great trajectory. It is a little all over the place. And I think I kind of did that by design, I can say now, at the end of a lot of different paths I've been down. But so yeah, I started working in high school journalism, working at my student newspaper, working at the literary magazine at Coral Gables Senior High. And my senior year there, I got an internship at the local newspaper in Miami, the Miami Herald. And I think that really gave me like wide eyes for wanting to be working at a newspaper, wanting to be in a newsroom for my day-to-day job. You know, I was 18 years old trying to think like, what is my adult life going to look like? And I knew that I wanted to stay in the newsroom. So when it came time to pick a major and go to college, the University of Florida was a state school as a Florida resident, a great journalism program. And I was really fortunate to be accepted and really happy to be able to attend, and spent 4 years there kind of learning everything that I could. There was so much more to journalism than I initially realized once I got to UF. You know, I thought I was going to write about music and stuff that I liked, but then I was like, maybe I should write about things that I'm not so connected to. I think that would be a better service to my readers. So sports kind of became my thing. I started working at the Independent Florida Alligator at the University of Florida, covering lacrosse and gymnastics, really kind of beats that not everyone was fighting for, but that I could tackle and, you know, really own and do my best work on, really learn. I knew nothing about gymnastics. I had never seen a lacrosse game before, but I covered both of those as my beats, you know, freshman year, and really started to excel from there. I got to copy editing at the Alligator, and then I got to be a sports editor and really, you know, kind of hone my craft and cover men's basketball and a little bit more of the like higher tier sports. But then, you know, we at the University of Florida, we started opening different wings of the building. It was a time when digital was really starting to emerge. My senior year, they opened the Innovation News Center at the University of Florida. And I was, you know, here trying to get a job wherever I could. And I wanted to soak up as much of the information as I could before I left the university. So I got my hands in, you know, got my hands dirty with as much as I could digitally, and started working on the radio station at the university, started producing web pieces for the radio station's website and web editing for other students' work and things like that. And throughout my time at UF, I did a ton of sports internships at different newspapers, at the Sun Sentinel and one at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And that was like my big internship out of state, really trying to spread my wings before I came back to UF for my senior year. And I had a similar feeling then as when I was in the Miami Herald, like, this is where I want to be. So I kind of set my heart on making my way back to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution after graduation. And I was really lucky that they were hiring for this kind of digital specialist job that sounded really interesting, sounded like something new. It was called a mobile reporting specialist, and it was the first one the newspaper was ever going to have. And they handed me a selfie stick, like they gave me an iPhone, and they were like, go do mobile journalism. What? And let's see what mobile audiences want to connect with. And this was in 2015. It was a time when journalism online was really, really growing quickly. And they realized that a ton, if not more than 50% of their digital traffic was people on their phones. So how can they serve those people better? And I think the position that they ended up hiring me for was their way of trying to figure it out. And I tried my best to figure it out. And I think I'm still trying my best to figure out how to serve mobile audiences, you know, every day as a digital producer at CNN. Mobile, for most of the day at on CNN.com, 70 to 80% of our audience is mobile. And that can go even higher, especially during breaking news situations when people are, you know, turning to their phones to try to figure out what's happening, where they are when they're not home.
Right. And I do want to note, I think it's great. Obviously, our audience can't see this, but your sweatshirt that you're wearing says facts first. And obviously, our little slogan that we like to say at Quill and Scroll is, I tell the truth, I'm a journalist. So I just love that. And I think our audience would get a kick out of that. Moving on and talking about all of your different experience, how have you learned to adapt your skills to multiple genres of journalism when you're approaching content for CNN Digital?
That is such a great question. We touch so many different stories. CNN publishes probably 500 stories a day, and those can range from anything to style, you know, like, could Kamala Harris wear a sari at an inauguration is a story we published today. And another story is, you know, COVID-19 is rising in every way, but this is what you can do to help stop it. And, you know, there's a huge range of what we do at CNN. We definitely have a ton of politics, and politics is kind of where I spend the most of my time, but I'm looking at headlines about all different kinds of things. There was an earthquake in Indonesia this morning. There was, you know, an accident on the New Jersey highway. There's so many different pieces of news that I'm seeing and I'm trying to make sure our audiences see. I think with every headline and every story and every piece that I read and look at, I'm just trying to make sure I can place this into the news agenda. And that's a lot of what we talk about at CNN. Like, how are we setting the news agenda? We know what the news is, and how do we set it up in a way that we can communicate it well to our audience? So, you know, maybe the sari isn't the top story of the day. That's something that can be lower in our feed, something we can try on social. You know, the lead is that there's supposedly all these second doses of the COVID vaccine that is supposed to be released this week. Turns out they were never reserved. They have disappeared. Basically, they're already out in the country being distributed, even though they were supposed to be held back. That's the lead. That's the agenda setting. Like, where are we on impeachment? Pelosi says she's sending the articles to the Senate next week. That's the agenda setting. As news happens, making sure that we lay it out in a clear way that signals to our audience what is the news you need to know. And maybe here are some other things that can delight you while you're here, while you're scrolling on your phone in line at Starbucks, though there's probably less of that happening right now during the pandemic. But those are, you know, the questions I'm asking myself when I'm approaching different topics of news.
Right. And, you know, we talk a lot about balancing news here at Quill and Scroll, specifically if we're looking at our news media evaluation service that we put on in the summer. Part of that is judging and evaluating how student news resources are taking their news and putting it together and piecing stories from, will Kamala Harris wear a sari, to news about the pandemic. Are there any tips you could give editors of student news resources on setting their own news agenda for their school?
Absolutely. I think the most important thing, and it's such a simple thing, but it can be overlooked so often, is to read everything. Like, you know, when I see a story published, it's very easy for me to just read the headline and put it somewhere. But it's much harder and much more important to actually click into it. So, you know, you get turned in a piece of content from one of your student reporters. maybe you're just trying to find a place for it in the yearbook or the newspaper layout, or, you know, what section of the website am I going to tag this in WordPress? Really reading through and getting familiar with that content to maybe find something in there that you didn't think was there is a huge, like, pro tip, I would say. And it's something that I try to do as much as I can, especially when I'm looking at the way I'm going to frame the story. So, like, maybe that sorry story didn't have sorry in the headline. Maybe it was like, what will Kamala Harris wear to inauguration? That's a fine headline, but will Kamala Harris give a nod to her heritage and wear a sorry to inauguration? Is it just bridges so many more genres, so many more, you know, topics, and it's more interesting to a reader, to an editor. It just is a better way to frame the, you know, story we're obviously going to write about. What could you wear? What could be the attire to this ball or to this event?
Right. And, you know, that kind of leads perfectly into our next discussion on COVID-19 pandemic coverage. You will be one of our judges for our writing photo and multimedia contest for one of our pandemic categories. And I'd like to focus on that framing piece, because obviously COVID-19 is covering our news stories. There's no way around it. You have to talk about it. How can students approach COVID-19 in an interesting way that gives their audience a different look at the problem?
That is such a great question, and something we ask ourselves at CNN basically every day. And it's something even today we had a long discussion about. We're about a year into COVID right now. We've had so many millions of infections and deaths worldwide. The pandemic fatigue is very real in day-to-day life across America, across the globe. You know, we've been living with this for a while and people are tired of it. But so how do we as journalists serve our audiences and, for lack of a better term, grab them by the collar so they understand, like, this is where we are. This is what's happening. We're at the most dire point of where we've ever been in this pandemic in this country. And one of the ways we like try to talk about it is, like, how can we help audiences snap out of the numbness that we see happening? How can we grab them by the collar? An example of something we tried today is a headline that not a headline we normally try. It's definitely a little more pushing the envelope. The headline was, "Don't ignore this headline. The pandemic is getting worse. What happens next is up to you." And those are the kinds of things we're trying to get creative with in terms of the way we're communicating what's happening. You know, every day we can say there was 200,000 infections in the US. There was another 4,000 deaths in America. That's a record we break almost daily. And, you know, that's a headline that I'm tired of writing, to be honest. But how can we say that in a different way that'll kind of wake people up to it? Another way that, you know, we're trying to cover COVID is beyond just the numbers. We're trying to cover it in terms of the funerals that people can't have, in terms of the goodbyes that, like, husband and wives are being denied of. We're really trying to look at the human aspect, as we always have been, but more so now than ever, as that numbness and that the fatigue is more real than ever. One really smart thing I think we do, and something I'm proud that we do, is the way that we cover COVID's economic impact and the way that it impacts, like, the real people. Like, on January 1st, when rent is due, we're serving the users a story about, here's what you can do if you can't pay rent today, because, you know, 11, 12 months into this, that's a huge reality for millions of Americans who have been out of work for almost a year at this point. So that's a side of COVID that's not like the ICU bed availability, but still super important and crucial to cover and to highlight.
Right. I think as journalists, often we think about that human aspect just because we are trying to stay in our objectivity, or at least stay in our facts. But the human aspect is fact, and it is what is happening today. And on that note, you know, there's so many different resources that are available, and information changes daily about COVID. How can students stay up to date on that information to make sure they're reporting what is true?
That's a really great question. One of the resources that we use at CNN is Johns Hopkins University COVID Tracker. They update numbers every minute, basically. And that's the numbers that we guide ourselves off of. At the beginning, we were tracking every case, but then it became it's extraordinary, the numbers that we're seeing today. And it's not something that we track every single diagnosis or death anymore. We rely on the experts at Johns Hopkins University and their tracker. And that's a tracker that's widely used by news organizations. It's something that is sourced frequently. We also rely heavily on the CDC for information, numbers, all of the news coming out of that organization, which is actually based here in Atlanta, just like CNN. Another one I would recommend just personally is the COVID Tracking Project. They do a lot of interesting work and they have been trying to make more of a splash on social with the data and information that they share. And I think that they're doing some interesting work there. I would recommend those three sources, obviously, to any student who's trying to get some good, clear information on COVID.
Personally, when you come to approach these entries, our entry deadline for the Writing Photo and Multimedia Contest closes February 5th. What are you going to be looking for in a standout pandemic story?
A lot of the things we've talked about make up a great story. You know, obviously you want to have the facts right. You want to give the article the news peg, but also the human element. You know, if I have to pick like favorite stories from the pandemic, and obviously I don't love that we're in a pandemic and it's a sad topic, but the stories that have really stuck with me are the ones about the people, the ones about the man in South Florida who hasn't received his stimulus check, who is on the verge of becoming homeless. And the quotes are so strong from him having lost his wife to COVID earlier this year. Like, those are the haunting, haunting COVID stories. Obviously, not everyone is going to have a story like that to tell. But I think that if you make an effort to really show the human impact of COVID, that is what's going to stand out in your entry. That's what is going to stand out for any reader and any judge.
And realistically, our student publications publish some daily, some weekly, some bi-monthly, and some monthly. How often should they be covering pandemic pieces, and how can they make that decision of, you know what, today I'm going to cover numbers in my county, or today I'm going to cover how a teacher's virtual learning curriculum developed out of their regular class coursework?
It's hard to even separate COVID from any of the news of the time right now. You know, there's definitely space for other stories and there's other cultural things happening outside of COVID, but even like the car wash that is still happening in spite of COVID-19 and the way that maybe this club is fundraising in a socially distant and COVID safe way, like that's still a COVID story, even though it's not like technically about a death or a hospitalization or an infection. To me, that's still a COVID story. So I would say there's probably much more COVID coverage than students even realize. The story about how the school board is deciding when kids go back in person or how that decision is even made, that's a COVID story. The story about the teacher who's virtually teaching, you know, maybe succeeding in a really smart way at engaging their students, that's a COVID story. I think that it's also great to have those stories that are, you know, outside of COVID and maybe delightful in a way that kind of provides an escape. You know, let's review the best content on Netflix or the, you know, the great new book that a local author has published or something along those lines. But even the Netflix story can be seen as a COVID story because we're not going to the movies to watch movies these days. At least most of us are just watching whatever Netflix is putting out. That is a shift. It's a cultural shift. And there's probably a mention of the pandemic in there, no matter which way you cut it.
Right. And I think that's a great piece of advice to take to students when they're trying to decide what they should submit to WPM, because sometimes that's overwhelming too, is, you know, I have this story that is so obviously about the COVID-19 pandemic. It's about deaths. It's about that human story that touches so many people's hearts. But then I also have this story that's about a club and the small ways that they've been affected. And I think that's something that students don't think about, is it has truly touched everyone's life in every single way. Well, as we're coming to the end of our time, is there anything else you would like to leave students with?
I think this is a really important time to be doing journalism at every level, at the scholastic level, at the professional level. Like, it's a difficult time to be doing journalism. There's so much happening. There's so much devastation. There's nothing like this in, you know, modern history. This is a very historic period in all of our lives. And I would encourage students to really try to embrace the challenges that it presents and try to overcome them to do the best work that they can do, because it's so important. It's more important now than ever to be a pillar in your community for sound information, but to also engage your readers, entertain them, and offer them a smile that they didn't have coming that day, or to offer them, you know, something that could help them live a little better during this time that's so difficult for so many.
And just a reminder to submit to our writing photo and multimedia contest. Our entry deadline is February 5th. We have 34 categories to submit to, which is so exciting this year. If you're looking for more information, visit quillandscroll.org/writing-photo-multimedia-contest. And that's all the time we have for today for this episode of The Source, Quill and Scroll's podcast. Erica Hernandez, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Until next time, Sylvia Club, signing off.